Welcome to Season 7 in this Life Update episode where Dr. Leah shares all about her second postpartum and how it's been now that her son is 1 month. She shares how, despite the birth and cesarean recovery and problems with his latch, how she is thriving in postpartum. We discuss how various phases of motherhood can be so different for women and the possible reasons for this too, based off of hormonal constitutions, recovery, complications, and more. Then I discuss how my husband and I are potentially considering a fifth baby, even though we felt completely done after our fourth was born. It's been a really heart-opening experience having our fourth here, and I share the hopes and fears and layers of complexity around making this decision for our family and how we plan to approach it with a strong six-month preconception plan first. We really are right here with you in all of this family-building era, the ups and downs, high highs and low lows, and let's dive in.
Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott. Two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
The metabolic needs of pregnancy, postpartum healing, and making breast milk require more minerals than in other times of your life, and staying truly deeply hydrated during these times is very important. Nowadays, there are more options for this than ever, and ingredient quality manufacturing integrity is very important for Dr. Leah and I. That's why we love Redmond Relight electrolyte powders. Mined in the USA, Relight contains Redmond's ancient unrefined sea salt with 60 plus trace minerals in addition to the appropriate proportions and forms of calcium, potassium, chloride, and magnesium that pregnant and breastfeeding moms need. Pregnancy demands a huge increase in blood volume and synthesis of an entire new baby, and that requires, you guessed it, minerals. This is the perfect blend to be sipping on during your labor or to have mixed into your bedside water bottle during breastfeeding. It tastes amazing, and my favorite flavors oscillate between mixed berry, strawberry lemonade, or lemon lime. Grab a sample pack option to try them yourself and use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 15% off your order of any of the products that Redmond has to offer, including their OG sea salt, other seasoning salts, natural toothpaste, bentonite clays, and more. Happy hydrating! Welcome, everybody, to the first episode of Season 7. Thank you guys all for being here. And it is really one of our big goals in 2025 to just continue our outreach with the podcast. And as, you know, like working stay-at-home moms, we don't do as well with like some of the marketing and different things that we probably could. We're going to try to do some different strategies this year as well. But it really also, I think the biggest impact is when you guys share it with people and then it gets them excited. And, you know, I feel like we have a really excited fan base and the people that do listen to this podcast every week. And so if you have it in you and you feel called to and it's genuine from your heart, please do share with some friends and make sure that you're also like subscribed so that it will automatically send you each episode. That is another big deal, but it also shows the algorithm to the podcast gods that people like it. So it's this, it's literally a grassroots thing from the beginning up. That's why when you hear YouTubers and podcasters say like, share, and subscribe, and blah, blah, it's like, this is why, because it actually really, really impacts their work and matters. So just wanted to say that. And thank you also for being here. And we are going to do a little life update episode about Dr. Leah's postpartum now being 1 month postpartum, and then about my potential fifth child preconception plans, whether or not that happens, but I'm going to talk about that. So, but Dr. Leah, you have a 1 month old son. Let's hear everything. Tell us everything about it.
Yes. Well, for anyone who doesn't know, I share my birth story in a previous episode. So if you want to know how he arrived into the world, you can go listen to that. We will link it in the show notes. And yeah, I've shared this on other episodes. We've talked about it before. Obviously, you have lots of children and I have two now. But I wasn't sure if my second postpartum was going to be good like my first postpartum. So when my daughter was born, I was really pleasantly surprised that I had a good postpartum, which if I didn't, I would have struck out in all four of the categories of becoming a mom, because they always say something is hard for everybody, at least one thing, you know, either getting pregnant, being pregnant, giving birth, or postpartum. And I was like, okay, well, I'm 3 of 3 so far. So if my postpartum's hard, that's going to just really suck. But I was really blessed with an easy postpartum with her, but I was like, no way am I going to be able to have that again because that's so lucky. But maybe that's how women feel who get pregnant really easily or have really good pregnancies, because that hasn't been my experience. And so far, he's been awesome. And you know, that I was telling people about this, and I think just why sharing as women is so helpful, because not only to share positive experiences, because I've shared before as well, so many people shared all of their really not as positive experiences with me when we were trying to get pregnant, which in their mind maybe was like, oh, don't worry that you're not pregnant. Look how terrible my life is. I'm like sleep deprived and like all these things. And I'm like, that's not actually very helpful, because I'm trying so hard to become pregnant. I want to feel like the thing that I'm going to get on the other side is a beautiful thing and not like a horrible thing. But I think it's just common human nature for us to share and complain when we're struggling, because we are looking for support, you know, and we're looking to process and all of that. And it's, I think people feel really guilty telling all the great stuff, especially to someone who's struggling to get pregnant, to be like, I love my life. I love my baby. It's so great. You know, it's like, you just, people don't say that around people going through infertility for the most part. So I had like a skewed idea of, you know, just motherhood in general, especially in the first years, and you're my best friend, and, you know, postpartums have been harder for you. And so I was just like ready for it. You know, I'm like, okay, I'm ready for this like really intense, like hard time.
Well, which is good, because, you know, then it's like, if you're ready for it to be kind of tough and you're sort of expecting, then when it goes well, you're kind of like, wow, this is awesome.
I'm like, wow, my nipples aren't bleeding. I'm like, yeah. I don't know. It's great. So yeah, I just was kind of expecting it to be harder, because I didn't think I would be able to have two good postpartums in a row. Even with a C-section and everything, I have been just really blessed with that. This healing of my C-section, again, I didn't plan a C-section. If you guys want to listen to my birth story, planned a home birth, turned into a C-section, just like my daughter's birth. So that's clearly just how I like to give birth. My daughter got a kitty for Christmas that you unzip it and kittens come out. So Mike was like, I wish they could just install that on you. I'm like, totally. Just like have a zipper and like get the baby out.
That's so actually really smart.
I know. I'm like, great idea. But yeah, so my healing with my daughter, I don't know if it's because I was in labor much longer with her and my uterus was really exhausted. I don't know what it was. I felt like that recovery was so hard, and that's why I really was nervous about having another C-section. I don't feel like I could walk for like 6 weeks. I was very, and I mentioned pain for a long, much longer. It just felt hard. And maybe it was just because it was my first surgery, and the second time around, I was like, I kind of knew what to expect. I don't know. But I mean, I was up and walking at the hospital because I left early, and they're like, you have to be able to get up and walk and pee twice and like all these things. And I like did it all. And even since being home, I know you've been on my case about it because I need to rest. And I know that. And I have been trying to rest. But just knowing that it wasn't like a necessity, like I could stand up and walk to the kitchen, whereas like I couldn't with my daughter. So C-section recovery has been going well. I've been using the red light, the Loom box, and I'll link that in the show notes. I really think it's helping, like truly. I've been doing it like twice a week or twice a day. I just lay it over my C-section scar, and I don't know if that's what's helping me heal, like that and Arnica. I've just been doing really a lot, homeopathic Arnica. And so in that regard, it just makes everything else easier, because there's no doubt having a C-section makes postpartum really challenging, especially because you're breastfeeding. I mean, it's honestly crazy. In the first few days, I was like, this is nuts, because you have this major surgery that is so intense. Another human who didn't give birth had a surgery like this. It's insane. I mean, they cut open your whole abdominal, you know, cavities, they pull the uterus out of your body. This doctor told me that. I'm just like, what? And put it back in. I'm just like, this is insane. Because my husband had to have testicular surgery, and they pulled the testicles out of his testicle and put it back in. And I was like, I get that, because it's like a tender area, but this is my whole uterus. And a huge, almost 10-pound baby got pulled out of my body and put back in and sewed back up. So
with no pain medication on the other side, I will mention.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, go listen to my birth story. That was the gnarliest pain I've ever experienced, waking up out of a C-section with my spinal didn't work. So it was just a whole thing. But what was I going to say? Oh, because you have to breastfeed and orient yourself and pick up your baby. And, you know, they say not to hold anything, pick up anything greater than 10 pounds. My baby's already 10 pounds. So I'm just like, okay. And, you know, trying to orient yourself on the bed, because I know you came over a couple times. You're like, why aren't you in bed? And I'm like, it's actually harder for me in bed because of my C-section, like to pick myself up and move myself around on the mattress and get in and off. It's like, it's actually really hard when you don't have ab muscles. It's almost easier to just like sit in a chair where I can just pop up, you know, and do that. And that was the one thing. It's like you're not sleeping because they are breastfeeding on you 24/7 and, you know, doing all of that. And then you have no ab muscles and you're trying to recover and you're trying to eat. And then your nipples hurt because you're breastfeeding for the first time. So the first few days were pretty intense. And I'm like, this is amazing. And I think going through the journey of motherhood just makes me tip my hat to all of the women who are mothers. I mean, we had this conversation where, you know, you walk around and you just like, you see women with children all the time. And I'm just like, you are all incredible. Like every single one is insanely incredible.
You said that, you did say that several times. You were like, I cannot believe that every human was born. And I remember thinking the same thing at one time. I had this like very strong image in my mind of walking in like North Park, Hillcrest area of San Diego. And Gage was probably like 6 months old. He wasn't even a newborn, but we were crossing the street and maybe going to like a burger lounge or something. And there was so many people out that day. It was probably a weekend. And I just was looking around like all of these people were newborns at some point and had to be born, and women had to take care of them and like weren't sleeping and were having breastfeeding problems or whatever it was. And because it just blew my mind. Like having you and I were both nannies in college. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I mean, I know that the postpartum side of it isn't as hard for you, but still the idea though that like, I thought because we'd had all that experience that it was going to be like much easier. And maybe it was to some extent because we knew children in general, but it is so different than when it is you and your baby and you are also responsible for feeding them. They came out of your body. You're up 24/7. It's so different to like come into somebody's house, hang out for several hours and then leave.
Go home and sleep 8 hours.
Yeah, exactly. Like that was not something that my little like 19-year-old brain could comprehend when I was nannying. I was like, oh, this motherhood thing's going to be like so easy. And I really carried that tenet into my 26-year-old having a baby. Just like, why is this so different? It's like, I don't know. It's so stupid now to think about it. But yeah, it is crazy to think that and this is literally where the pregnancy and birth and postpartum amnesia stuff comes in, because it's like, you just forget. But it's honestly like my newest best coping mechanism.
Memory loss is my newest best coping mechanism.
That's my newest best coping mechanism, which is memory loss.
Throw that Alzheimer's prevention book away. Who needs it? It's saving me.
Because I'll literally think to myself when I'm having a hard time, there will be a day when I don't remember this, like where I won't even like remember the struggle of this moment or this pain or whatever it is, you know, because there is so much intensity in that early time. And you do just take to it so well. Like I remember maybe you were, I don't know, like 3 or 4 days postpartum. And although you were dealing with like a lot of pain still from the C-section, and then his latch was like not that great in the beginning. And we'll get to that too, about all his latch stuff. Mm-hmm. So you're having some breastfeeding pain, but you were like, there was something that had like lifted from you since he was out of your body.
Yes.
Like speak to that a little bit, like how you felt.
Oh my gosh.
You know, because pregnancy, you do not thrive in pregnancy.
No, I don't know what it is. And you know, you think we would know being doctors. And my biggest guess is a lot of women feel really good when they become pregnant, not necessarily the first trimester because they're nauseous and I get that. But there's something for me about pregnancy where, and this is sort of what I experienced with you with Gage, because we knew each other for a long time and we were in medical school together. And I remember when you got pregnant with Gage, I was like, something's wrong with Morgan, because you were so quiet and like internal. And I was like, what is going on? Because, you know, people know you, you're loud and you love to talk and you have a big energy. And it was like, everything was like really internal. And you are my closest and only friend who had been pregnant. So I had no other experience. And I was like, what is happening? But it was almost like he had taken over your body or something. <It's crazy. laughs> And for me in pregnancy, I don't know. It's like, I'm not a depressed person normally. And I'm really depressed in pregnancy. And I think it's because I feel so sick and I feel so bad. But there's like other levels too, because I don't know. I feel like there's a way that people can kind of snap out of that, even if they feel bad. You know, like I had a C-section, I'm in pain, but it's like, I'm so happy. So it's not that it's just like pain or struggle that is like inherently leading to me feeling low or like off. And yeah, it's so weird. I mean, the pregnancy is just so tough for me the whole time. I try to be happy and I try to like it, but I don't. And then even in the third trimester when I'm feeling better, I'm not feeling good. You know, I'm better, mm-hmm. but I'm not good. And for me, like as soon as they are born, and I've never had the experience of having, you know, an empowered vaginal birth, which I was really hoping I would get because I really wanted to have that experience to know like, how much even better could it be without being on meds and without, you know, being in surgery and having knocked out and having a tube down my throat and like all of these things, because even despite all of that, I'm still like so happy as soon as I'm postpartum. Like the minute the baby's in my arms and not in my body, I'm just like, I don't know, it's oxytocin maybe, but I'm like other women experience oxytocin and they have vaginal births and have even more oxytocin because they haven't been on Pitocin. And so I don't know what it is. It's like a lot of women
feel, like hormones maybe.
So I have really high hormones. Well, high estrogen. I have high estrogen, not high testosterone. That's a bummer. That would be great if that could bump up. But I have really high estrogen and some women don't. And you know what I've noticed is I'm trying to pay attention to my patients and friends who I know have lower estrogen and how their experience of pregnancy is. And this isn't scientific and I haven't looked into the research and I'm sure it exists and people are like, duh, don't you know? But it feels like my friends and patients who are more on the like lower estrogen, you know, constitution, spectrum seem to really love pregnancy. And, you know, estrogen increases like 60 times in pregnancy, which is a lot for hormones. And so I'm already high in estrogen. So maybe that higher imbalance, it just is too much for my body. And a lot of women feel really crappy after they give birth because your hormones drop almost suddenly, you know, and that's where people just can have postpartum rage and postpartum anxiety and like the blues and all of these things. And it's almost like it brings me back to like a good place because I'm like happy, you know, I'm just like so happy. Or it could be the oxytocin. Maybe I don't make enough in my normal life. And so that like burst of oxytocin postpartum, even with the Pitocin, is just really great. But whatever it is, as soon as birth happens, I'm just like, something is lifted from me. I feel like myself again. I feel happy. And that's the one thing that I've said throughout this postpartum and with Avia's is I'm in pain. My nipples hurt. I'm not sleeping, but I'm happy, like really happy.
I'm so happy that you're happy. I really do think that theory, if you have another baby and if I have another baby, which both of us are big ifs on this, right? But if we do, we should test both of our hormones at the very end of pregnancy and then like immediately postpartum a couple of data points just to be N of two and like look and see what the levels are. Because I do think I'm probably – now this is like – this is going to sound shocking being – well, it would be more shocking for you because you are more like the hormone doctor than I am. But I have never tested my hormones.
So crazy to me.
I know. I expect that I probably do have low estrogen because I am one of those people that feels so good in pregnancy. And I think it's the like anabolic effect of estrogen where it like plumps up all my tissues and like like my fat turgor changes. Like I feel – because I'm like warmer. You know, it's like my whole metabolism and everything, all my vitality is like boosted. It literally feels like a drug or something. It's like, oh, here I am. And then my kind of normal skeleton self is just always on the lower side. It's funny too because when I look at pictures of myself in high school, I must have had – and I wasn't on birth control until the very, very end of high school. I'm trying to remember. Yeah, maybe like the last year and then the first year of college. I was on hormonal birth control for like 2 years. Either way, I had like such a different fat composition. I had like, you know, maybe it was just baby fat kind of still, but like my legs and my face and stuff. And I wasn't unhealthy. I was a major athlete. Like I was working out all the time. But there was something different there than like my normal constitutional self now. But I get more like that place. And that's kind of like the youthful, like to me, I feel youthful and vital during pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is estrogen.
Yeah, it has to be. And then yeah, for me, postpartum, it's mm-hmm. right. And then for postpartum, it's like, boom, it's just gone. And it feels so dramatic in conjunction with the pain of breastfeeding and the lack of sleep and all those different things. Mm-hmm. Whereas, yeah, you probably feel like, oh, this huge cloud has lifted off of you. This big, huge, like hormonal influence is gone. Plus, I also wonder how much of the baby's energy integrating into our like energetic sphere is hard with, and it's not to say that like that baby's spirit is like not meant to be with us or something like that, or it's, they're going to be a challenge for us or anything like that. I just think that it's like having to integrate in the energy of another being is some people are more sensitive to that. Some people perceive it much more sensitively than they did before. And, you know, I have always been a little bit, had that like pregnancy introversion thing that you were speaking to, but it was the worst for me with Gage, with my first pregnancy. Yeah. And I was youngest then and probably had higher natural estrogen levels then being healthier. So maybe there was a component of that too. I don't know, but I do remember feeling like it washed over me like a wave, which is like what you said, where I just felt so different and it did not go away for like months. And then, but by the end of the pregnancy, I did feel like my normal self. But yeah, there for a couple months, it was really weird. And I remember our friend, Dr. Ari Calhoun, too, really, really strong memory of her like standing up against the wall in some, maybe it was like a new naturopathic doctor office or something in Encinitas. We were all visiting together and she was like 20 weeks pregnant with her daughter. And she was being so quiet and so like, you know, kind of weird. And I was trying to talk to her and she was like, I just like can't, I just like literally cannot talk. And I was like, dude, yes, I totally know what you mean. Like that, because I had never heard anybody talk about that before. Like the inability to be creative, the inability to give any energy outward. And it is sort of this like really weird thing that I feel like a lot of people do experience to some extent or another. And that is just what it is. I wonder what that is exactly. But anyway, back to you and your experience of postpartum. I think it's so fascinating that you do have these factors that would potentially, and for a lot of people probably do, contribute to an overall negative experience or poor mental health. But for you, it's like your like extreme stoke and, you know, ecstatic mood supersedes all of the like body pain and like the way that it went and any trauma and all. Which makes me so happy because thank God that you get to have a good experience, you know?
I know. No, it's really true. And like what you said about the baby integrating, I'm a highly sensitive person. I really am. I mean, I know if I've like eaten high fructose corn syrup and a piece of candy, I'm like, whoa, I feel that. which is really shocking to me that I can like go to the hospital and have a C-section, have all these meds and not have some sort of like crazy experience from that. But like in pregnancy and with the baby and stuff, it's like, I just can't have it in my body. Once you're out of my body, we can do whatever. I can handle pain. I can do whatever, like, cause I'm back into my normal self. But yeah, I am really happy. So that's been going great. And his latch, like you said, it wasn't terrible and it wasn't perfect. I think because your kids have struggled so much too with Avia as well. You're like, oh my God, her latch is so great. And now that I've learned more, she probably had a lip and tongue tie. I just never got it evaluated because her latch was fairly good. She could flange her lips and, you know, we were getting plenty of milk. I have a huge supply. I mean, I literally just like shoot milk all over my baby's faces all the time. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. I mean, they're literally drowning in my milk. And I have even have to like do a haka sometimes in the middle of the night to like, you know, make it slow down or he's just like choking. It's just terrible. I'm like, I'm so sorry. I mean, my daughter definitely has like a lip tie now because I can see it. The frenulum from her lip goes all the way under her teeth. Like it wraps under and it's very obvious. And I just never had her evaluated. But with him, I was more nervous because it feels like boys struggle with the lip and tongue tie thing a little bit more than girls. I don't know if that's accurate.
That's good. I don't know. That's a really good question.
Yeah. For some reason, I like thought I heard that somewhere. It could be totally made up. But similar with autism, like boys struggle more with autism than girls. It's not that it doesn't happen with girls, but there seems
boys
to be
some. Boys do struggle with like more neurological things in general. And if it's like a midline along the neural plane during the neural tube formation, if it has anything to do with that, not that that's necessarily the same thing as like neurodevelopment, but maybe there's something still there, whether it's more of a susceptibility or maybe it has to do with the Y chromosome and like just genetically being handed down 50-50 from dad. And I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point. So, you know, a lip tie, for anyone who doesn't know, we have an episode about lip and tongue ties.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes.
But it's like when the frenulum, the midline you know, fascia is tight. And so it's harder for them to get a good latch. And so I had him evaluated, you know, by a couple people because I just, well, my one friend was telling me about how the lip and tongue tie can affect more than just breastfeeding. It can affect them later in life with their, you know, the way that their mouth develops, their palate, their teeth. It can affect snoring, sleep apnea. It can affect tension in the muscles and back pain. And, you know, all of my husband, Mike, has a lot of back pain and he really has struggled his whole life with that. And I think he was tied because he had a lisp and he sucked his fingers. And they say that when kids suck their thumbs or their fingers sometimes that they can't get the tongue up to the top of their mouth to basically soothe them because the tongue should be resting at the top of the palate. And that is what increases in oxytocin. And the kids who can't get their tongue up there will use their fingers. And, you know, Mike was a thumb sucker for a long time. My daughter sucks her fingers, you know, all of the things. And so I bet he had a pretty big significant lip and tongue tie. And he's like, if I can do anything to prevent him having any ounce of the back problems that I have had, you know, I want to do it. So we ended up deciding after getting evaluated by a couple different people to fix his lip and tongue tie. Not because he's not gaining weight. He's actually been gaining weight like a champion. But because if it is going to affect him later in life, I would rather do it when he's little before, you know, he's more aware and has to like do all the exercises himself, kind of thing. So we decided to do that.
But then also he was like clicking, popping off,
yeah.
Like struggling at the breast. It's just that you have such a supply that he's kind of surviving off of your letdown. This is like a phrase or a term or a concept used in lactation where it's like babies who are paired with moms. And I do feel like it happens like this a lot. And I don't know if it's like breasts adjusting to, you know, like our bodies just being smart in that way. I don't know how that would even possibly work, but who knows? Bodies are magic. Where the baby doesn't actually really have that sufficient of a suck or a latch and mom just sort of makes up for it. And so she has a hard, fast letdown and tons of milk. And so baby is okay. And it's really good. And that would be an evolutionarily beneficial adaptation if that is the case, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But then what can happen for those that have heard of this or maybe experienced it is that potentially later on, and this is like, nobody has a crystal ball, but nobody wants to take the risk either. Right. But like it could happen where at around 3 or 4 months postpartum, when the milk supply starts to is like regulated now and is not so extreme. And if this child still has this, you know, morphological, anatomical problem in their mouth of function where they can't really function to pull it out in the way that you need to with the back of the tongue can't get up there, then it can slowly erode the breast milk supply because baby is not going to be able to actually suck hard enough and well enough to get the milk out in a way that is going to then maintain it for them to be able to have a, like, you know, exclusively breastfed picture. And so we see this all the time where women around 3 or 4 months postpartum would be like, I'm starting to lose my supply. It could be potentially from a tie that wasn't fixed. It could be potentially from going back to work and pumping. Usually those are the time periods where that happens too. But either way, just like have it on your radar. If this is something you're working with your baby that you maybe don't want to get them revised and you're like, well, we're doing okay. Just know that sometimes that can happen. That can be a thing. Mm-hmm. Also, it is my suggestion based on having 4 kids that we've had revised or released, I should say. Like the proper word is to say that you have a tongue tie release because a revision is like doing it again because you're revising some other work. But anyway, a release, not that you didn't say that. I'm just saying, I was saying it wrong. So I wanted to correct myself. Try to do it before 8 weeks.
Yeah.
Like maybe even before 6 weeks, ideally. Like to me, Gage at 3 weeks was okay. I don't know any other further baby in my own personal experience, but I have seen it a lot in the clients and patients that I work with. And it just gets harder and harder on the baby's experience, which it is very quick. And overall, it's like a non-traumatic and highly beneficial procedure. Whereas like, you know, there's other things that we do that are more traumatic and have no benefit. Whereas like a release is a huge deal for a baby for the ability mm-hmm. to breastfeed, but then also all these other things you're mentioning. And we do have a podcast episode with a biological dentist, or, you know, he's an airway dentist, I guess you could say. He's in this spectrum of dentistry where they're aware of palate expansion and airway. And we'll link that in the show notes too. His name's Dr. Dan Bruce. He is here in the Valley and he works at the office where you and I both got our last most recent babies revised, which is called Boise Integrative Dentistry. If you need a recommendation, Dr. Ryrie there is fantastic. We are huge fans. Yeah. There's lots of also other doctors there that are amazing. But anyway, we'll link that there too. And I want to encourage people to not wait too long because revising a 10 or 12 week old baby is a really, really different deal than mm-hmm. revising like a couple of week old baby. And yeah. doing those exercises is a lot more difficult, traumatic, et cetera. Their awareness is different. They're here more in the world. And now they've had, let's say, 2-3 months of trying of, you know, kind of developing a bad habit with their latch of mm-hmm. this mouth. And now it's going to take a little bit longer for them to learn their new mouth. So if we can do it earlier on, I know I kind of do it on the much earlier end of things on like day, you know, 3 and 4 of life, which is not necessarily mm-hmm. going to work for everyone. And you do ideally want to have some body work sessions in prior to the release like you did. Mm-hmm. And I try to get at least one in for my babies, but I literally could not nurse my babies if they didn't get revised in that time period. So anyway, I just wanted to mention a couple of things about this because yes, your baby's gaining. And so people might say, well, why would you go through that? And da 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 da. And it's like, no, he had several signs that were,
yeah.
and it's like this, I would see it in the office all the time when I worked in that pediatric office is like, the 6 and 7 and 8 year old kids now that have major sleep disordered breathing problems and they are lip and tongue tied and the parents knew it at the time, but didn't revise them because they weren't manifesting in breastfeeding problems. Wow. But if we know that there is something morphologically going on in the mouth that could potentially cause these airway issues, ooh, I'm going to put also a book in the show notes that's called okay. Breath by James Nestor. It's really, really good. Or Breathe. I always forget if it's Breath or Breathe, but anyway, okay. Thank you for sure. I just wanted to say that. And then also, can you yes. speak to his little laryngeal malacia now that he has?
Yeah. Oh my God. Best friends have kids with laryngeal malacia.
So annoying.
I know. So you're Sunny, your youngest had laryngeal malacia, which I'm surprised your other kids didn't.
I know.
So my baby also has laryngeal malacia. So it must be, I don't know what it is. It's not as severe as Sunny's, but for any of you who don't know, it's basically weak vocal cords, right? Is that what you would call it? Floppy yeah, vocal
like,
cords.
Yeah, floppy vocal cords, basically. Yeah. And so there is a correlation between lip and tongue ties and laryngeal malacia, but they really don't know what exactly causes it. And what it is just this epiglottal arch where you're supposed to have this cartilage piece that is holding open the airway when they inhale and exhale. It kind of doesn't hold the structure on the inhale. It collapses in and it's usually omega shaped, like, you know, like think of the Greek letter omega mm-hmm. either way. So it's shaped like that. So then when there is inhalation and the pressure changes like that, it like becomes really narrow and the air coming through it makes audible noise and it squeaks. So for Sunday, she had like, the only reason why she wasn't classified as having severe laryngeal malacia was because she didn't ever have the like cyanotic, meaning low blood oxygen mm-hmm. symptoms. Thank God, because that would have been so scary. But she had every other very, very high, you know, severe marker because every single inhale she took, and even still at 14 months old, you could hear. It was like, yeah.
And it's like a Strider, which is really scary because yes. Strider's that like high-pitched inhale sound, which is typically what we look for in babies that could be having like RSV or, yes. you know, some other respiratory illness. You know, Strider is a sign that they're having labored breathing and that's really scary. And so mm-hmm. when your baby has that all the time, so the difference is Cade is his happens when he feeds, which is more common. Your Sunny's is more severe because it happens all the time. But a lot of babies can have it when they feed and then they can be normal outside of feeding. So with Cade, he literally sounds like a goose. I mean, it is like a honking, squeaking, like high-pitched goose sound. It is so funny. And he just has a hard time. Like when he's feeding, he's getting a lot of milk, but it's like I'm shoving a fire hose into his mouth and he's having a hard time breathing and he's honking and squeaking and coughing and choking. And it's like, oh gosh, this is like so sad. So that's just one thing for people to know as well, that if they do have a baby that has that stridering sound, to definitely get it looked at because it could be an illness that's really life-threatening or it could just be laryngeal malacia. But then also it could be a lip and tongue tie problem. So that was another reason for us that I'm like, okay, these are like signs and he has a really weak tongue. So for him, there's just a lot of weakness in his mouth, which is why he clicks and has a bunch of issues. So we're working on that. We're doing a bunch of exercises and the stretches for his release, but also some myofascial exercises, craniosacral, all of that, which is so fun. I'm like in Dr. Morgan's world, having my kids do all of these things, which I never did with Avia. It definitely adds another layer to like have to leave and go to appointments and stuff, which isn't super fun, but it is okay. But because he is taking in quite a bit of milk, at least right now, you know, he's sleeping well, which helps. I mean, I've had some stretches, you know, of like 3 or 4 hours at night, which I know some women can't do because they'll get mastitis. I personally, for some reason, can. I don't seem to have a huge, you know, risk factor for mastitis, or at least so far I haven't gotten it. But that's the longest I'll go. You know, it's like 4 hours at night. So that's been good. And yeah, I have been trying to eat well and take my supplements. It's harder through the holidays. I mean, I've been eating, you know, cookies and puppy chow and other things like that, which aren't the most nourishing, but really fun for my heart to have. And it's just been lovely. The biggest thing now I'm concerned about is there's a lot of baby illness going around. So just keeping him safe and making conscious decisions of protecting him. You know, our daughter isn't in preschool right now because I just don't want her to bring something home when he's super little, and, you know, making conscious decisions about our travel and even going to really big public places or large indoor playgrounds for my daughter, just because, you know, there's a lot of stuff going around right now being in the winter. And that is the, it's really sweet having a winter baby because you get to just like cuddle up and stay home. And then there's also definitely more illness. So just keeping him safe is kind of a thing on my mind, but we're giving him vitamin D and probiotics, and he's getting all my good breast milk. So that's good. And yeah, everything seems to be good.
Well, and it's one other layer too with a baby with laryngeal malacia that when they get a respiratory illness, it can be more severe because they already have this kind of like compromise. So it is a good, that was one thing that I do remember when we got Sunny evaluated, because same thing, she's born in end of October. So it was like winter and RSV and all the things. And now, you know, in Idaho, at least in Northern Idaho, there's a large pertussis outbreak. And anyway, it's just that the doctor was like, make sure she doesn't get sick. And I was like, oh, okay. She's the fourth, you know,
older children.
Yeah. I was like, I'll try. And I was so lucky. Like, I mean, knock on wood, she literally still has not been sick, and she's 14 months old, which makes me so happy. She's had a runny nose like one day, maybe twice, but not like sick.
That's shocking, and because you have three older kids.
I know. She seems to take after my son, who takes after my husband in terms of like constitution and immune system, which is really great. But also my immune system has never been the same after I did that cell core cleanse. So I am like a totally different person than I was. Yep. Let's see. October, November, December, January of 2022 into 2023. Cause that's when I got pregnant with hers, January 2023. Yeah. That's when I did that 4 month cleanse, and I have literally never been the same. I'll put the link to that as well.
Yeah. The link.
Do it at your own risk. Do it with a practitioner, but I will put the link there for you. So maybe my epigenetics shifted and changed, and she got that too, because Sloan, the one that I had prior to her, was the sickest of all of our children by far. She was literally had some kind of cold for like the first 2 years of her life. And it was so, so, so hard. Oh, it was nuts. But either way, okay. So I just wanted to say that about babies with laryngeal malacia.
Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. Did you know that 97% of women in the US take a prenatal supplement, yet 95% plus are still deficient in key nutrients? My favorite prenatal is from a company called Needed, because they dose nutrients at levels to not just meet the bare minimum as most prenatals do. They actually use form of nutrients and dosages that allow mama and baby to thrive. Needed actually approached me years ago and asked me if I could help them design the perfect prenatal, because they knew that the current prenatals available were not actually helping women. We spent over 3 years diving into the research and understanding what practitioners are seeing and what women actually need at this important season before we formulated this amazingly supportive option. It's no wonder over 4,000 practitioners now recommend Needed, something I am very proud of. If you have followed me for a while, you know that prenatals and optimizing nutrients starts long before pregnancy, so no matter where you are along your fertility or motherhood journey, Needed is the brand I recommend. Head to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% on your first order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Okay, back to the show.
One thing that I think is cool is that you can take supplements now, and you really couldn't during your pregnancy.
Oh my gosh, that's the other thing. So it was really hard for me to take any supplements, like any capsule, I was so nauseous, even like powder, anything made me feel so sick. It was such a struggle for me to get anything in. You know, I did my best, but it wasn't perfect. And the minute I give birth, it's like, I feel great. I'm super happy. And I am not nauseous. My nausea completely goes away. And then I can take supplements. It doesn't trigger my gag reflex where I'm like throwing up the pills all the time. it doesn't, like, the smell doesn't bother me. It was just, like, amazing. So I'm back to being able to take whatever, which is wild, because there was a moment during my pregnancy where I'm like, this is so severe, and I've thrown up supplements so many times that I don't know if I'll ever be able to take them again.
Yeah,
because like I feel like it's going to create, yeah, some sort of PTSD in my body where I like won't be able to swallow anything ever again. And I was actually really worried about that. I can eat eggs. I can eat all the things. Yes, I know.
Yay!
I know. No nausea at all. It's amazing. And it's just like, why? Why does my body feel so sick when I'm pregnant? It is the weirdest, weirdest thing. So I'm very happy. That's another thing too, is like when you're so sick for so long, almost 10 months of being sick, and then all of a sudden you're not sick, that's a very happy time.
Yeah, it is. You know? Just to feel like yourself, like to come out of the fog and just be like, holy moly, like that was quite the ride. I feel like you were pregnant for forever.
Forever. Well, and we lost an embryo prior to that. So, you know, we had done a transfer and I had had HCG and I got nauseous. Like as soon as I get an HCG shot when I'm in, you know, IVF, I'm nauseous. I mean, my body does not like anything that has to do with pregnancy. And then we lost that embryo and that was really hard. And so that happened right around Thanksgiving of 2023. And then, you know, I got pregnant with Cade in February of 2024, but it felt like I was like mourning and grieving and like had nausea and all of that. So for me, it literally felt like over a year that I was pregnant. And then he never, you know, he was late. So I went 2 weeks past his due date. And, you know, a lot of women give birth 3 weeks early, and you know, it's like a huge difference between
yeah, it's a really big weeks. Difference.
You know, so it's yeah, it felt like forever. And there were times again, I would get really low. I see why, and this is the other thing I was going to mention, and then we'll talk about you, but why it's important to share as women, because everyone's experience is so different. And when you're not struggling, and when you're in a season and you're not struggling, it is really hard to have empathy or even think about how anyone else would be struggling when you haven't had that experience. And, you know, for someone who just has sex and gets pregnant, you know, which is awesome. I'm super happy for people like that. It is hard sometimes to understand like the pain and the struggle that someone would go through who doesn't have that experience. Or same with pregnancy, you know, like if you get pregnant and it's so beautiful and wonderful, you know, it's hard sometimes to have the empathy for the person who, you know, like can't walk to the kitchen because they're vomiting. And, you know, I have friends who've reached out to me who are sick right now in their pregnancy. And they're like, I know you get it. And it's not that you have to like have gone through this horrible experience to like have empathy and like feel for people, but it is sometimes hard to relate to people who haven't had any struggle in that. And that's how I feel postpartum. You know, like for people who have postpartum anxiety or postpartum depression or, you know, don't love their baby or have a really hard time connecting and bonding with them or whatever, it's like you just take it for granted when things are going easy. You know, right. When someone's like, how's your postpartum? I'm like, oh, it's great. Like not even knowing that there's a whole group of women who are literally like suicidal and like freaking out and like can't sleep and like all of these horrible things. It's not even in your realm of possibility for that to even happen. You know, if I wasn't a doctor, I wouldn't even know that happened for women. Because for me, I'm like, I don't know. I just wake up and I feed my baby and he goes to sleep and I eat food and it's great. You know? And so I think as like when we share our stories, not that we need to like make other people feel bad when we're struggling, but just to have empathy and compassion for women, you know, like your coworker who says that she's sick in pregnancy, like if you've never had that experience, like really try to dig deep and like understand how hard that might be, because you might not understand. And until you go through it yourself, you're like, whoa, you know, like what you're going through is really hard. Like, how can I support you or whatever? Because, everyone's experience is different. And when things go easy for you, I think it's just hard for you to understand that it could be hard.
Yeah. And like sometimes the only thing that people really need or want to hear is just like, wow, that sounds shitty.
Yeah. That sucks. Yeah.
You know, like that sucks. Like just saying that, I think is people are, they fear to say that because they think maybe that it's going to make the other person feel worse about it or something.
Realize that their situation sucks. Yeah, yeah. You know,
like highlight it for them as if they didn't already know.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, the best, because not, you can't do anything about it for that person. So the only thing you can do is just be like, at least validating for them that what they are experiencing is sucks. And that's okay. It's okay to do that. You know, it's like, damn, this blows. And I hope one day you feel better, basically.
Yeah. The validation is huge. The worst thing you can do for someone who's struggling is to, either belittle what they're going through because you haven't had that experience. So you're like, mm-hmm. they must just be a baby, you know, like they must just not know how to like handle it or deal. Like it wasn't hard for me. It's like, okay, well, that's, you know, or just be like, well, try this, you know? So anyway, so let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. Do you have your heart set on starting a family and are eagerly preparing to begin trying within the year? Have you been actively trying to conceive for several months? Do you have a burning desire to optimize your chances of conception and avoid the distressing path of infertility? Or have you been navigating infertility for a while, yet you yearn for new solutions, a supportive environment, and an approach that addresses the root causes of infertility? Our current fertility system is broken. Many couples receive almost zero support on optimizing their health and improving their chances of conceiving before or while trying to have a baby. 1 in 7 couples end up trying for over a year and then are often shuttled into the medication or reproductive technologies route like IVF. Although there is a time and a place for these tools, so many couples would have different outcomes if they had the education, resources, and support I provide in my Fertility Formula program. This program is a step-by-step, doctor-designed, holistic fertility solution for the couple who wants to conceive optimally. It includes everything a couple needs to know with all of the resources I've created over many years seeing patients in practice. From mastering the cycle to boosting egg and sperm quality, balancing hormones, investigating female and male fertility, having access to order your own labs, both hormones and functional medicine labs, nourishing the body with eating and managing that whole aspect, fostering fertility energy, ditching toxins, reducing stress, rebalancing the gut and vaginal microbiomes, and detoxing prior to pregnancy, this program has it all. On top of that, it includes the bonus modules of breaking up with birth control, optimizing IVF if that ever becomes needed, and my pregnancy loss guide. This is the holistic information and step-by-step guidance you aren't getting from your regular doctor that will only improve your chances of conception and the health of your future baby, no matter where you are along your fertility journey, or no matter what support you might need, whether that's getting pregnant naturally or going through IUI or IVF. Visit www.womanhoodwellness.com/fertilityformula and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% off the entire program. Again, that's womanhoodwellness.com/fertilityformula and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15%. Talk about you.
Yeah, or be like toxically positive too and just being like, well, you know, just move forward and just get over it. And it's like, okay, no, it doesn't work like that. And either way. Okay, well, thanks for sharing. And it makes me so happy that you get this. And it also is so funny to me because we could not be the most more opposite best friend pair to exist on the planet when it comes to motherhood. Like, it is so funny. Like, anything that's hard for you is easy for me. Anything that's easier for you is hard for me. It is.
We were built and designed by the gods to create this podcast.
So that we can understand all situations. Like,
sprinkle all these two girls on the planet and give them opposite things so they can come together and share everything.
I know, seriously. It is kind of crazy. Like, I mean, it couldn't be more different. Like, to say that postpartum is like my time to thrive is just not something I would ever say, you know?
Yeah.
And even though I try to set myself up for that and all the different things and whatever, and, you know, just as you did, you try to set yourself up you could not have possibly set yourself up more for a good pregnancy and birth. And it's like, sometimes it just isn't that way. So anyway, okay. My update is that Sunday is so extremely enjoyable and fun. which I love too. I love it for me and I love it every day. And I look at her and I'm just so grateful. And it isn't like my other kids weren't fun, but there is something different about her. And I think it also is just that the perspective that I have of this whole thing now, like when Sloan was born, okay, well, when you have your first, you're just like, everything is new and everything is like, you're very, very present to all the moments because you've never gone through them before. Then you have your second, which is, I think, a really redemptive experience in a lot of ways, because it's like, you get to experience it all over again with less anxiety and less worry and more confidence and all that kind of stuff. Then for me, the way that we had Sloan with the close age gap between number two and number three, I was kind of in like just survival mode and she was different, you know, she was just like a very difficult baby. And so I didn't like identify, I also had a really hard time not bonding with her. Bonding isn't the right word because I loved her so much, but I had to convince myself. This is so funny. I was thinking about this the other day. I had to like continually convince myself that I am the mother of this baby. Mm-hmm. Isn't that weird? But she didn't, she looked so different to me. She looked just like my husband's side of the family. It's like, why wouldn't I just like get that and think that? And so did my son. It's not like he looked like just like me. It's not like I needed that. But there was something that was so odd, and I don't know what this is, and I wonder if other people have had this feeling, but I had to just be like, no, this is my baby. And I was like overwhelmed with love for her, but it was some kind of a disconnect. I think maybe
I think that's very common. I think you have more of like mild, but more of the classic like mental struggles postpartum.
Yes,
because you definitely had postpartum anxiety with Gage for sure.
For sure, postpartum anxiety with Gage. Savvy, I think I was really chill. I had a hard time, really, really hard time actually for like a couple of weeks during her 4 month sleep regression. Mm-hmm. But then with Sloan, I had like full on postpartum depression. Like,
yeah. Well, and that's like what people say, like that they're like, you know, I mean, women will like leave their babies' places. Be like, I like that's not my baby. Like, I can't connect.
Yeah,
with them.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Like, that's an extreme situation.
Yeah, like a psychosis,
like a mild yes. version of that. But that you do seem to have that manifestation. Like, I have perinatal depression. You like during pregnancy. You have it like more postpartum. So I'm sure a lot of women have had that experience.
Yeah, it was just so odd. I had to just be like, no, this is like you. I do think one part of it too was that because to me in my perception, Savvy was still such a baby. She was only, yeah. she wasn't even two. And so I was like, I had these two baby. It was just weird.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, and then Sunday now, like she was so different. But okay, with the fourth, my point is about like with having now a 3-year age gap again, which is like my favorite thing ever between Sloan and Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the experience of having a second baby where I got to have this other baby with all the other experience that I'd have of having three others, but I wasn't immediately like depleted or postpartum from another one. I had had a gap. I'd been weaned. Like I felt good. I was like really healthy when I was pregnant with her. I was like all these things, you know? And obviously her initial postpartum was really hard because of the laryngeal malacia and the spitting up and all that stuff. But she is just like, you know, Gage said one time, like, Mom, every baby fits. And he's just so obsessed with her. And it's so sweet. And I think maybe that's another thing is having older kids. Like, we all just are obsessed with her. We all just are mm-hmm. appreciate her so much. And it's so fun and fulfilling for me to watch the older kids play with her, enjoy her, for her to wake up in the morning and look at me and say, Mama, Dada, Dougie, Gage. Mammy, Gigi, Papa, that she this morning she listed off like everybody she knows. She's 14 months old. I'm just like, what is going on? You are sweet. It's weird. She's like saying so many words and she can't say Savvy and Sloan, but when I said their names, she looked to the door and like pointed. She knows who they are. And yeah. I'm like, should we go see her sisters? You know, they were awake. And so she's like, she's like all excited. She can't wait to see that. Like, there's so many things about it that are so sweet because of just the family dynamic that we have of her being the fourth, but then also mm-hmm. her. Just being. She is so ecstatically happy all the time and it's so much fun. And because I have lived this whole past year really soaking her up as the last, I've been so present to it and I've been like really trying to lean into like the joy of it. I also think potentially there's something to be said about having four kids and chilling on a lot of the things that you know, the things you can't control. And like, I do really try to keep my house clean. That is like a pathological personality trait that I have that I wish that I just didn't care about as much, but it's hard for me. It's like the physical clutter mm-hmm. translates into mental clutter for me.
Yeah.
And I, you know, working from home, I need my space to be clear so that I can focus and so that I can be creative and do the work that I do. Right. And so anyway, there's something about all of that, I think. And when she, you know, I said I was done. And I'm honestly like, I feel kind of betrayed by myself.
Because you darn self. Oh, God.
Who are you? I don't trust myself now because I when she right around turning one, maybe a little bit before she turned one, Wes too, like we both started kind of talking about it. And then Gage was begging for a fifth and he has been begging for a fifth for months now. And he didn't prior, but then you know, around the same time that we all started kind of thinking about it, it was like this groupthink sort of thing. It just like landed into our household where everybody was like, wait, should we have one more baby? And it was kind of a joke. And then I was like, no, absolutely not. And then I started to kind of think about it. And I was like, well, that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, because Wes was going to get a vasectomy in November. Well, he was going to get a vasectomy in June. He'd had it scheduled in June. And then that did feel too soon to me. I wanted to wait till she was 1 year. That was like my own weird morbid thing. I was like, I just want her to get to like 1 year, because statistically, if something bad is going to happen to her, it's going to be in this first 12 months. And if something bad did happen to her, God forbid, we would want to have another baby. Like, I know that's so messed up to think about. It makes me want to cry just even saying it, but it was realistic. Like, I didn't want to cut off the stream of possibility in case something did happen. But then we were like, okay, we'll do it in November, 1 month after she's one, you know, and it kind of gone back and forth. And anyway, long story short, we sort of landed in this place where we're considering having one more. We could have one more based on my husband's age. So, I mean, we probably could have more than that, but like for where we're comfortable right now, he's 43, I'm 35. So if we can see, you know, he'd probably be like 44, maybe even 45 when that last baby's born. And that to us feels like the upper end of where we would want to be. You know, I know people have their own, they go higher and that's fine. And it's different on the man's side than it is with the woman and whatever. I know women have babies in the 42, 43, 44, whatever. I am not the one here in this situation because we're 8 years different and I'm younger. And so it's like more about him and his just sort of fatigue. And, you know, he kind of tends to be, he pushes through. He's like the enduring personality pattern that Mike is.
Her husband's very similar.
So he self-sacrifices his health and just to kind of like keep pushing through. And I worry about that. You know, like I want him to prioritize himself and like, how do we manage and balance this where like we both work from home, we have no consistent childcare, we are semi-homeschooling. You know, the two older ones do go to a half day school 4 days a week, but it's like, that's all it is. And then we still have the two younger ones at home. It's not like we ever have a consistent time period where all of the kids are being taken care of. Like that is not something we have right now. It's not something we've had for a long time since our nanny went to college. Love you, Summer, so much. You're the best thing ever. And so, you know, she can sometimes on breaks, she'll watch them or on weekends or something, but it's not consistent. And so our life is very busy and very full. And I do sometimes think like we're at max capacity, you know?
Yeah.
And
so I have a question for you. And I think you mentioned this on Instagram and it's something I've been thinking about too. We're now both in a very similar position because I'm on the fence about having a third. We have a third embryo. And, or even doing IVF again to make more embryos, but like you're kind of in the space and Sunny is so amazing. And this isn't, this like sounds terrible because I've had two, what I think are very happy, easier kids. Like I haven't had the experience of having a really challenging child. You have had, you know, different difficulties with sleep, with Sloan, all those things, but it's like, do you feel like you want another one because she's so great? Because I feel like that with Cade, he's already smiling and laughing. He's a month and he literally looks me in the eyes. He will hold my stare for like 10 minutes. I've like an adult, I've never even had stare in my eyes as long as him. And he smiles and he like is starting to laugh. And it's like, oh, like I look at him and I'm like, oh my God, I want another one of you. Like, you know, despite all of the crap I've been through. But then I'm like, but what if this third baby isn't like him? What if
Yes, I know what you're saying.
And then I like have this like anxiety that it's like, but if you're going to be like Cade, I'll totally have you. But what if you're like this really challenging child? And then I'm like, oh, but that's such a sad, bad thing, I think, to think and feel, because it's not like children are bad. You know what I mean? But they're more challenging. And I feel like it is easier in some capacity to like love or be excited about babies that are happy and like that aren't like a huge challenge, but that sounds so bad to say.
No, it's logic though. I mean, anyone would agree with that, right? And even if it makes us uncomfortable and even if it is sad, but true, and of course there is like beauty in all of the challenge and stuff too, but anyone I think would say, yeah, of course, like if I could choose to have a happy, easy baby, I would. And I definitely think about that. I'm glad that you brought it up.
Because, like, how do you know if it's going to be?
Yeah. And you don't. And I definitely worry that like, what if, you know, because I sometimes I'm like, do we just end on a really good note? Like, do we just stop now? And like the taste in my mouth of infants will be like of, you know, that first year. Cause I honestly think that in my life, 2024 is going to go down as one of the best years of my entire life.
Aww.
Like my favorite years, you know, it can make me cry. Because she is I like, even though, oh my God. Even though it was so hard, I knew deep down it wasn't her. It was like her body, you know?
Yeah.
Her body had this thing that was so tough, and it, like, you know, sleeping was hard and eating was hard and she puked everything. She never gained weight. Like, we went to all those appointments and I was so stressed out and she, you know, all of that. It was so hard. But like, I knew that she deep down, and I sometimes didn't know this, and I sometimes felt really worried about, like, how is this going to work in our family, mm-hmm. having this, like, when is this going to end? And she had such a severe, and laryngeal malacia gets worse before it gets better. And there was all this stuff, but like, I also felt really confident deep down that she was meant to be here. Like, I knew mm-hmm. that this baby had been around me for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And she just, it was so clear as soon as Sloan came out of my body that there was a fourth baby, even though we didn't want that. We never planned for that. It was like not something that I felt even like slightly open to, but I was just like, damn, I know this is happening though. Like, I know it. Like, I could say that tomorrow was Sunday or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it was such a very weird intuition is like that though. It's like, you just know it. And it's, there's no judgment of wrong, right? You want it, you don't want it. It's just like a truth. And so, and then for her to come in the way she did, where she, like, you know, it wasn't planned and she snuck in this sort of like impossible situation. I felt like it was all
she
just
is coming.
Yeah, she's coming. Like, it's meant to be. Like, she belongs here. She belongs in this family. And I just loved her so much from the instant that I saw her face. And I, like, you know, it, I do sometimes think, like, maybe we just stop now and it's, and it feels really, really set and settled. And I would be happy. I think that when we just had three and I had this knowing of a fourth baby, I knew deep down in myself that if we chose not to, if we chose to, like, do a vasectomy, something permanent, that I think I would have had regrets.
Yeah.
And I really worried about that. And I try to sit with that same idea now with myself. And I think, would I have a regret of not having a fifth baby? And I don't think I would, but mm-hmm. I think that right this moment, and I don't know, maybe we just need to kind of, like, because we are just even discussing it, it makes me feel like maybe we need to keep this conversation open and keep it going. Yeah. And then, like, you know, Wes is down for it. And he's like, he says that he thinks five sounds more complete. Like, he thinks that there's something about that. And I'm like, okay. But then, so, you know, and I go back and forth, and I'm really surprised at how much I go back and forth, because sometimes in, like, the middle of the night, when I'm awake for whatever reason, or my brain is just in that, like, subconscious state as it's drifting off to sleep, my answer is a no. Like, it's a mm-hmm. clear no. I think of all the reasons why we shouldn't and why four is amazing. I absolutely love four. I don't know mm-hmm. what it is. I think it's partially her, but I also just love looking at the four of them and, like, the even number of four. I don't know, but I'm like, would five tip the balance? Like there is, in some ways, you know, our car would be the same, but somebody would always be sharing a room. It's like, okay, that's not the end of the world. People have big families. And then I'm also like, the joy that she has brought to our family and all of the kids, even if they were challenging. And that's what I would say to that idea too, because I know you haven't experienced having a challenging baby and still loving them through it, but you do. You love them through it. And I know that you would logically understand that, but having had that experience partially, I mean, not like we have a medically, like, you know, that would be, but still, I have a really good friend with a medically fragile, complicated child, and, you know, he lights up her entire life. And it's difficult. And then, you know, with my husband's older brother being disabled, so he was born totally normal, but at 2.5, he drowned in a pool and he basically died. And then they saved him. He came back and he was in a wheelchair for the rest of his life and in diapers, and he lived to be 36. And it completely change the trajectory of the family, you know, in good ways and bad ways and a lot of different stuff. But I think that it is the reason why Wes is the way he is. And Dallas had this rippling effect in the community, and, like, you know, his life was so, so, so important. So it's like, I think, because Wes and I talk about that sometimes too, like, we've been so lucky. We've had four beautiful babies. We've had four beautiful births. Like, what if we had another, but it, like, wasn't? Or what if,
yeah.
Are we taking the risk again to, like, put ourselves in a position where, like, something doesn't go well? Or, and I know that that's a fear-based line of thinking, but I do have that. Like, I think about those things and I'm just like, man, we have just been so lucky. And, like, what if something is wrong? And there's no better person that I would want to parent a child that was problematic or that had problems with than with Wes, mm-hmm. because he knows yeah. that life, and not that he wants to repeat that life. But, and it seems very scary to me, you know, because mm-hmm. I didn't live in that. And it's not to say that that would even happen, but that is kind of like the worst fear, right? Like, what if,
yeah.
or if they died or something, you know, yeah. I mean, or I just think about in general, like tipping the scales of our resources and money and time and our ability to, you know, give to the other kids. And there is a lot to think about. And at the same time, I know we would morph around it. Like we would figure yeah. it out. Like we would, it would be okay. Like it would probably have its challenges and stuff, but the benefit would be higher. The benefit of knowing that person who feels unknown to us now, we would be like, oh my God, I can't believe we maybe consider not having them or whatever. You know, I know at some point I'd feel that way beyond all those, the different various challenges. So that's kind of the place that I keep finding myself coming back to is like, well, if my heart says, if both of us, right, if we both say, yes, we want this at the end of this like preconception stuff that we're going to do, which I'll tell you about in a second, then like, I think that we'll go for it.
Yeah.
Oh, because that's really fine. It feels, yeah. Thanks. It does feel like, you know, there's one more opportunity for this because of the ages cap, you know? But I will say too, it's kind of trippy for me because I don't really feel a spirit, and I didn't feel a spirit with Sloan either when I was like trying to get pregnant with her. Well, I'd had an early miscarriage between Gage and Savi, and then between Savi and Sloan, both of those. And right before I conceived Savi though, I did feel a little baby spirit around me. It was brief. It was literally like the 2 weeks before I conceived her. Not prior to that. And then with Sloan, at least if I had that feeling, I don't have any memory about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so not to say that that has to be a component, because I didn't have that with Gage either, like my first one, you know, whatever. It was so strong with Sunday.
Yeah.
It was like I felt pressured, you know, and I was speaking to people who can, you know, tap into that spiritual world, and they kept trying to reassure me, like, you don't have to make this choice. Like it, but it did feel pressure. It felt like she was like, I am coming in.
Yeah. Let me in.
And I'm so happy that she did. And you know, despite all of this stuff, like it's just, and this is where I say like my newest coping mechanism is this like amnesia thing, because I'm like, you know, you get over it. And like, then you have this person in your life for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And so I don't know, that's kind of where we're at. But basically right now where we're sitting is, okay, well, one really quick thing too, is just that the conversations that we've been having with our son about this topic is something that I'm like never going to forget about him and his character and just the sweetness of this time at nine is so special. It's so sweet. Like I could just never imagine how sweet this time period is.
Get this girl from Ignatia.
Oh my God. I must be about to be my period.
Are you ovulating? No, you wouldn't be crying if you were ovulating. You would be crying.
No, I'm on day 24. I'm like, maybe I'm going to have an early period because this is crazy.
Oh, yeah.
But I do just feel like I my heart has sort of just cracked open more and more with each kid, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's my favorite thing. Like, you know, when I set out to have kids, the like 6 to 10 year old age range was like very turned off to me. I was like, I don't like kids that are those ages.
Yeah, same. I mean, I'll get there because my kids aren't there yet, but.
Right. But until you have your own kids, because it's like, how do you interact with kids like that? Like, how do you, and they can be kind of annoying. They can be kind of snotty. And like, I don't know. That's just what I remembered from maybe nannying and stuff. Loved babies and loved toddlers. And then I was kind of like, I don't know, we'll deal at that point. But there is such beauty in this age. And he's really just like, he's going through that thing now where he's like very sentimental and he's understanding like these huge concepts of mortality and like gratitude and how much he loves our family. And he's so expressive about that. And he has just been like really begging for another sibling. And, you know, we have conversations. I'm like, Gage, I cannot guarantee it would be a boy. Like it might be another girl, and he does really want a brother, and I understand that totally. And I wish very much, if I could choose, I would choose a boy for him and for myself, because baby mm-hmm. boys are amazing, as you know now.
I know, I'm obsessed.
And it's not like girls are not, but I have three, right?
Like, yeah.
I would enjoy the opportunity of mothering another son. I think that would be amazing. I would also enjoy the opportunity of mothering four daughters. I think that would be amazing. Like, especially with the line of work that, you know, I'm in, it's like, that would be awesome. Either way, it would be awesome. I really don't care. And one thing I think if we did have another one is we wouldn't find out until the birth, which is so fun for me.
Fun. Yeah.
We did that with Sloan and I loved it. My husband did not love it, but you know, it's like two times of the five finding out or not finding out is fine. You know, three of the times finding out is like more in his favor in that side. But anyways, Gage just like, you know, he's like, I don't care. I don't care if it's a boy. Like, I don't care if it's a girl. I just want, like, you know, and he gets very emotional about it. And it's just been really, really, really special. And not that that is enough to sway a decision that is so huge like that, but I do think it's interesting. And it's a component of, it's making me have all these like emotional thoughts and ideas about my future. Like when I'm 60, and then somebody we met recently at your sister's house was saying the sentence, which I've just, when she said it, it like sent shockwaves through my body. Like it really, it really reverberated so hard with me. She said, it's not about how hard it is. It's about who's at your table. Mm. And meaning like for the future, because motherhood is hard. It is hard. And I was explaining to her like about how hard postpartum is for me. Like that idea of bringing another baby into the world and like staring that beast down. Like for you, it's pregnancy and birth, right? It's like, Holly, like the idea of you
to – such a similar path moving forward because I'm in the same place. Like, can I do that? Like literally, can I?
Yeah, like, can I handle it again? Like, can I handle it again? And I have continually said after each one, I'm like, no, I can't. Like after Sloan, I was like, I cannot do this again. And after Sunday, I was like, I'm never doing this again. She is the last one. I'm never doing this. And I remember just waiting. So I have a very vivid memory of wanting her to just be 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. Like that first, like four, five, like where you're at right now, loving your life. Like I was at the low, like it was every day felt like torture, you know? Yeah. It's so interesting how
That's
different
how my pregnancy was.
Yeah, and I'm so sorry. Like, it's a lot longer of a time.
And to the point where it's like, I see why people would like end their lives, which is like a really gnarly place to be. Because it's like, I actually don't think I can do this for like more time. You know, like those are big decisions to make. Like, can I go back there?
I know.
You know, but same with you. I mean, and your postpartums are so hard, but it's like, yeah, it's like, this is where motherhood amnesia comes in because it's like, forget all that.
I know. You have this baby with you and it's like,
sweetest. I mean, even now I'm 1 month postpartum and I'm like, look at Kate. I'm like, it was worth it. All of it. Every single minute, every vomit, everything. I'm like, you are everything. I love you so much. Like you're the sweetest, cutest thing in the whole world. If I had like chosen not to do that and you weren't here, like devastation, you know, but it's just so hard. It's like, it's a really weird place to be, to make that decision. It is
extremely weird. And I feel like nobody talks about it enough, honestly, where it's like, you want the family member in your family, but to do all of it again is like a whole thing. And my pregnancies have been getting harder progressively as they've gone on too. So I'm like, okay, like I do love pregnancy in general, but I puked a lot with Sunday and I'd never puked before. And I'm like, God, does that mean that I would puke again? But whatever. Either way, I'm really not even thinking about the pregnancy or the birth. To me, it's the postpartum, staring that beast down in the eye and just being like, okay, another release and cranial sacral and a baby that scream cries in the car for 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, whatever it is. And like all the stuff. But I'm just like, I know now though, I have so many experiences, you know, I have four experiences of it all being worth it. Like you just said, it's still worth it. So I'm like, okay, well, then maybe do we do it? So where we're at right now, I guess I'll just like move forward beyond that idea, but thanks for just like letting me share all my emotions because it is a really heavy topic. And I have so many feelings about it and I don't know where we'll land because I feel like I could be happy not. And I could just be like, you know what? At some point it has to end, right?
Yeah.
And we could do that now or we could do – and we're not going to do a vasectomy, but that's why I got this Aura ring and I'm going to – you know, we're going to move forward with figuring out how we are not going to get pregnant when we don't want to get pregnant. But – and I feel confident about that. And I also feel like, well, if I did get pregnant, then as much as I really don't want the experience of a huge gap and having gotten rid of all of my baby stuff and then accidentally fall pregnant, that is something I am very freaked out about.
Oh, so I'll maybe give it all back. So you have
lots of things. Well, and maybe, you know, maybe in the future, if we did have another one, we would feel more comfortable about vasectomy. But right now we're just like, okay, let's not right now. But anyway, what we're going to do is both of us have health goals that we've outlined. So my husband did the Vibrant Men's panel from your website, which we can link. Yeah. And I'll write that down, Vibrant panel. And it came back with some not great things that we were like, oh, all right. And we sort of knew that, you know, he hadn't been prioritizing his health, and it's not terrible, but it's just like, okay, we need to get your metabolic health better. And he needs to have some sort of a consistent workout routine. He's lost a lot of muscle in the last like 5 years because he doesn't work out. And so, we're active. We have this property. He's constantly doing yard work and things, and that's fine. But it's not like mid-40s as a man, if you're starting to lose your muscle mass, like it's kind of a tipping point, now or never. Like, you need to get it back and maintain it. And so, for the long run, and just for him, his strength, he's had several injuries that have also prevented him from not, you know, being able to like lift in a consistent manner. But I'm kind of like, well, you know, that I think is just going to continue to happen because your body is not in peak position, right? So we need to, and it's feeling just more pertinent now than ever in that sense. So he has some health goals that he's going to be working on in a preconception sense. So for about 6 months, what we've decided is between now, it's, you know, the end of December, and like June, July, we're going to both of us be put on this plan. So for me, for my health goals, and I'm going to document this all on Instagram, and I have a preconception highlight that I'm starting to, so you can see stuff that I've talked about in the past. But I really would like to also get strong and also gain muscle, but I also want to gain fat. It's really easy for me to be too skinny. And at some point I need to wean Sunday. So slowly wean her, gain probably like 5 to 10 pounds of, well, overall, if I could gain 15 pounds and maybe like 5 of that's fat and 10 is muscle, that would be amazing. That would make me so happy. But even if it's just 5 muscle, yeah, like that would be great. Cause I just want to feel strong, you know, I don't really care about the look of it. I just want to feel, fit and able. And I can tell, I like, you know, I'll move in a certain way and I'm kind of like, ooh, weird. Like, you know, like something in my neck kind of like creaks. Like, is this 35? Like, what is that? Because I'm not a well-oiled machine anymore. You know, I used to do yoga all the time. Like, I just, I have really fallen out of that. And, you know, walking is cool and I do walk a lot, but you got to stretch your muscles and do different things. I do want to go to a pelvic floor PT and have my pelvic floor assessed prior to pregnancy as well. And just make sure that if there's anything there that I'd need to work on, that I do. Cause if I have another baby, I would be considered a grand mal, which means that you, like a woman who's given birth 5 times or more, and there are like more negative risks associated with the birth of grand mal, like postpartum hemorrhage and prolapse and different things like that.
Wow.
And so I'd want to make sure that I also would be considered a geriatric pregnancy, right? Like being over 35, which is so funny.
You are getting up there, you geriatric.
Yeah, grandma pregnancy. I don't care about that at all. Like that is not a concern to me. But I do want to just make sure. I feel like my pelvic floor health is probably pretty good, but I only went to pelvic floor PT after my first two babies and not in these after these last two. So I just want to like tune that up, you know, lots of supplements, lots of just like rebuilding minerals and nutrition and different things like that. So that's kind of what we're going to do for these next 6 months, integrating it into our life with as much as we can. And then in the summer, reassess and just be like, okay, what do we want to do? Do we want to continue to wait with the window open, or do we go for it? Or are we feeling like, no, maybe we're good? Like, And it's hard for my brain to want to sit in this place of not knowing. Because I truly, if I had to say that I'm leaning one way or another, like last week I said it was probably a yes. And then now this week I'm like, it's really, really 50-50. And then sometimes it's like, no.
So and when would you try again? Like what would the age gap be?
I think that, well, what I'm not going to do I am not going to get pregnant in January or March. I would tell you that.
Oh my gosh, I know. Another baby.
Another October or another December baby. It's wild banana pants having 2 in December and 2 in October. I do not suggest it. But so I'm thinking that like in the summer, in like June, July, we'll reassess where we're at with our wants. We'll have done enough preconception work then to feel comfortable with trying.
And so then how would the babies be Like 20.
So Sunday would be like 20 months when I'd get pregnant. And if I got pregnant in the summer, like in July or something, let's just say. And then July, August, September, October, November, December, January, February, March.
We're counting.
April. So she'd be like 2.5. Basically, okay. Exactly 2.5, which would be a medium-sized age gap from the between the two that I know, right? I know a 22-month age gap, or I know a 3-year age gap, and that's it. And so, and I feel like that would be fine. And then my husband would be 44 when the baby's born, and not 45, which for some reason makes me feel better, which is like a silly little thing. But I'm just like stuck on that. I don't know why. I wish I wasn't so much stuck on it, because I know that but I just am. So I'm accepting it about myself anyway.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what we're going to do. And if at the end of that we decide no, then well, whatever. We've just done all this like health work and we're in a better place, and then we move on. Because I am excited about that too. I'm excited about moving on to this like next phase of my life with my kids and not constantly running it back and having another baby. Because it is a lot of like, you know, and I often feel on this homestead that we live on, like I don't contribute like at all, and I don't do anything because I'm like just always having a baby, or I'm pregnant, or I'm postpartum, or the baby that I have is old enough where I technically as a person could go do something, but I'm like watching the baby. And so then I don't, and then I feel bad. And it's not that anyone is making me feel bad, but it is just something that like it is what it is. Like I would like to contribute more. I also do worry about like how having another baby would set back what I'm doing with my business, which is not only just like, you know, for fun and that I love it, but it's definitely like a necessity for our family and contributing to our family financially. And so that there's just so much to think about when you're a woman who is
now
working also and
is
raising
so
them.
Challenging. It really is. So,
anyway, that's where I'm at.
Yay. And I'm going to be giving you access to my fertility formula course. And if anyone else wants to prep preconception, or they're trying to conceive currently, or they're going through infertility, any of them applies. We'll put the link below as well.
Yeah, because that is, I think people don't really see the value, or they forget to do preconception care in between kids. Mm-hmm. And I didn't do preconception care in between Sloan and Sunday. Okay, one thing I know for sure is I will not name this baby anything that has starts with an S. Even though I love all S names. Literally, my name list is like all S names. I just love them. I don't know why, but either way, I will not. But between those two, yes, I had done that cleanse, but it wasn't for preconception and I wasn't on a prenatal or anything. It was like a detox and a parasite cleanse, but man, it really changed my whole life. But anyway, I think that, you know, for those that are in between kids, if it's in your plan, if it's something that you can do to put that extra effort into your health prior to conceiving is a good idea. And so your course is for people who are in that preconception phase, also for people who've been trying to get pregnant, are having a struggle with it too. So it, like, it spans multiple, you know, types of people. And so I'm going to be sharing what it is that I'm like taking away from that with you, because I don't have, this is not my like specialty, right? It's yours. And I know about it, but not as much as you. And I don't love it as much as you either. And so I'm going to be like really leaning into you and your expertise here for like what would be the highest value impacts that I can make with our stress and our sleep and all these different things. And even just having this Oura Ring for a few days, I'm like, wow, this is really fun to look at all the sleep stuff.
Yeah. Super fun.
Yeah. So I'll be tracking that all. And then, you know, you'll be in this position in like a year and a half or something where you're trying to figure out if you're going to.
I know.
Right now it feels so, it's so early to try to decide, you know, you're only 1 month.
But that's what's scaring me is when I was pregnant, Mike's like, we're not doing this again. Like, we can't do this. And I was like, I agree. Like, this is insane. I am going to die. And then as soon as Kate is born and I love him so much, I'm like, oh man, like, I don't know. But then, you know, there's the risk that we lose our third embryo and then we don't even have a chance unless we go through IVF again. And like, that's a whole other thing. So it's like, we both have these like really big decisions that are different for different reasons. But yeah, it's really crazy. But I'm really excited. And for anyone listening who is pregnant, you have amazing resources for postpartum, which is also not my forte and is yours. Either your pregnancy call, if you're like trying to conceive or currently pregnant, and also you have a lot of amazing resources postpartum. I've learned so much from you. So just being prepared in any season of motherhood that you're going into. And that's kind of what we're here for. So this was like a beautiful life updates of where we're at, but we also have great resources for you guys, no matter which, you know, path of the journey you're on. If it's preconception, fertility, check out, you know, the fertility formula. If it's pregnancy, you know, pregnancy call with Dr. Morgan and her postpartum resources, because we do have a lot of good stuff outside of this podcast too.
Yeah. And welcome to season 7. So thank you guys all for being here and sitting with us as we in real time delegate and figure out our lives.
Thanks for being our therapist.
Exactly. Okay. Thank you. Are you pregnant or trying to conceive and looking for reliable, engaging education around how to have a healthy pregnancy and prepare for the future aspects of motherhood to come, like birth, breastfeeding, and postpartum? Look, I've got you. This is exactly the education you'll receive with my 6-week pregnancy call. You get access to my most comprehensive resource of everything that I wish women knew before heading into motherhood. It's a pregnancy health course, birth prep series, breastfeeding 101 course, and postpartum planning class, all in one. And for 6 straight weeks, we meet for an hour each week on Zoom with a small group of like-minded women going through it too, for you all to ask me questions and get clarity from a trusted expert. I can walk through it with you and hold your hand. The 6-week pregnancy call is only offered 4 times a year, so get on the wait list now. Head to milkmedicine.com for more information or click the link in the show notes. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content. We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.